parasha Va'era begins with that famous promise of the five Lashonos HaGeula. Hashem tells us, V'hotzeiti, I'll take you out, V'hitzelti, I'll save you, V'lakachti, V'ga'alti, V'lakachti, I'll redeem you, and I'll take you as my nation, and finally, V'heveiti, I will bring you to Eretz Yisrael, and I shall give it to you as a heritage, I am Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu takes such great tidings. We're in the Pasuk Tet in Perek Vav. So Moshe, first one, spoke accordingly to the children of Israel, but they did not heed Moshe because of shortness of breath and hard work. Mikotzer ruach u'mavodah kasha. We spoke about this in the past. We're going to look at it again today. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, come speak to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he send the children of Israel from his land. To which Moshe Rabbeinu responds, and this will be our key pasuk for today, Mirtz Hashem, Yud Beis. Moshe spoke before Hashem, saying, behold, the children of Israel have not listened to me. So how will Pharaoh listen to me? And I have sealed lips. So there are a number of questions that we need to raise on this group of psukim. First of all, when we speak about the children of Israel did not heed Moshe, what was the change from Perek Dalet, where Moshe Rabbeinu immediately came and told Kla Yisrael, you know, Pakod Yifkod, Hashem's going to redeem you. So there the Pasuk says, Vayamenam, in source 4, and they heard that Hashem redeemed the children of Israel, and he saw their affliction, they bowed their head, Vayishtachu, everything was great. So originally, when they originally hear the good news, Vayamenam, the people believe. Now it says, they didn't listen to Moshe, and here Moshe Rabbeinu says, behold, the children of Israel did not listen to me, how will Pharaoh listen to me? So, first question is, what changed in Klal Yisrael that they now don't believe? And our second question, and this is where we're going to focus in on Mirtz Hashem today as well, is Rashi. Rashi says, Ve'ech Yishmeini Paro, how will Paro listen to me? Ze'achan ma'asara kal v'chomer shabatara. This is one of the ten kal v'chomer arguments in the Torah. If you want to see where the other sources are, 7 bet, brings down the notations of where to find them. We need to understand, what's this Kal V'chomer? At first glance, it makes no sense. And this is what Rabbi Miller in Shabbat Shirim in source number 6 says. This, according to Rashi, is one of the 10 examples of the Torah of a Kal V'chomer argument. This description hardly seems, however, to meet the case. Strictly, a Kal V'chomer argument would demand similar circumstances in the two cases compared, only intensified in one case, so that the consequence becomes even more likely. Here, however, right, so if I don't like anything sweet, of course I'm not going to like ice cream. Right? I don't say if I don't like anything sweet, I'm not going to like apples, like, or pickles, or what do they have to do with each other? Here, however, the circumstances have no basic similarity whatsoever. The motive for the people's refusal to listen is because of Ruach Mevadah Kasha. Why aren't the people listening? Right? Moshe Rabbeinu says, the children of Israel haven't listened to me. Of course Pharaoh isn't going to listen to me. Well, hold on a second. The reason the children of Israel haven't listened is because of Ruach Mevadah Kasha, from hard work. That doesn't apply to Pharaoh. So what analogy here is given? The Ordaniel. I mean, this is the question all the Mefarshim ask. The same reasons don't apply to Moshe. Maybe Paro will listen. So our first question is, what was the change that they originally listened and now they didn't? Our second question is, what is Moshe Rabbeinu trying to say? And Bnei Israel didn't listen to me. Of course Pharaoh's not going to listen. But Bnei Israel aren't listening. Pharaoh tells us clearly because of hard work, shortness of breath. That doesn't apply to Pharaoh. What is the analogy that is being drawn here? And finally, the end of the pasuk says, he didn't listen. And I have sealed lips. What does the sealed lips have anything to do with what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying? And again, 7 Aleph brings down the Mizrahi and the Maharal, the classic commentators on Rashi, and how they explain it. I'd like to try to look at this Rashi, that this is one of the 10 Kal V'chomers in the Torah, on really two levels. Diversion and defensiveness. The first level is going to have a number of levels in it, and that is, what was the Kal V'chomer, what is the Kal V'chomer that Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to establish here? When we're talking about sending somebody on a mission, so there are really three components that we're going to look at today in this dynamics. One is you have to believe in the ones sending the mission. Two, you have to believe in, the shaliach, the messenger. Two is you have to believe in the mission. And three, you have to believe in the ultimate person who's sending the messenger on this mission. And those are the three elements that we find that Moshe Rabbeinu perhaps is intimating in this pasuk. First and foremost, Shemen HaTorah, Rav Weinberger says the following. He says, V'nireh b'derah pashu me'o de'inyan, source 7, v'ani aral tzvataim einah siba ela mesovav. It's not the cause, but it's the effect. Right? V'ani aral tzvataim, and I'm a sealed lips, I can't talk. You would think, well, that's the cause that they're not going to listen to you. No. He says, it's at the end of the pasuk, but that's the effect. Because the fact that B'nai Israel aren't listening to me, that makes Moshe into a Ral Satayim. Devaduk u'menuseh dein koch b'yad ha-shaliach ele kedei kochol shel b'shaliach. If Moshe Rabbeinu realizes that the people don't believe in him, if Moshe Rabbeinu realizes that he cannot be an emissary to bring out what they desire, they don't hold by him, right? They didn't listen to Moshe. V'lo shamu el Moshe. Right, because Ruach Bavadakasha, if they're not going to listen to Moshe, if they're not going to make him their leader, then Moshe Rabbeinu, Vani Arel Satayim, I can't open my mouth. Who am I then to go to Paro? I can only go and represent people who hold by me, who believe in me. So this is the Kavachomer. If the people don't believe in me, if the people don't hold by me, so how do I expect the Paro is going to hold by me? I can only be as effective as how much faith they have in me. But if they have no faith in me, so you expect Paro to have faith in me? And the Chasam Sofer echoes this in source number 8, where he says, it says in Pirkei Avos, those who are involved with the community benefit from the merit of their forefathers. However, now that Israel has renounced my mission, as well as the promise given their forefathers' redemption, I stand alone without the patriarch's merit. Consequently, how can I deal with Paro? I'm limited. And that's, on a very basic level, what the Kal Vachomer is. If the people don't believe in me as an individual representing this cause, so then obviously Paro's not going to believe in me as well. But it's not just the person who's representing. It's the cause itself that has to be something that the people really believe in. And this is what Rav Rabibo in Minchas Michal points out in source number 9. Moshe, if we're talking about believing in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and really that was the goal and is the goal of Yetziat Mitzrayim, so I would expect B'nai Yisrael to believe in me. Why? Because they have a certain, Klaisar Maminim B'nai Maminim. They're people of belief. If they're not going to believe in me, and they're not going to believe in the mission, right? They're not listening to this. They're not interested in redemption. They're not even paying attention to me. And here I'm telling them this great news, they're going to be redeemed, and they're ignoring me. So if they're ignoring the mission itself, and they are B'nai Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, they are essentially people who do believe, then Kal Vachomer, how much more so that Paro, who is a no ben brit, isn't going to listen to me and isn't going to believe in the oneness of Hashem and in what this mission is all about. And we know, as the Divrei Yisrael, Majid Sarevi points out in 10, the Geula, we've spoken about this at length, is Talui Be'amuna. In order to be redeemed, you have to believe. What's allowed us to be redeemed from Egypt was our Amuna, and without Amuna, we're not going to be redeemed in the future. That's Rav Pinkus speaks about this in Shabbos Malkasa, that who were the Jews that were redeemed and didn't die in the four fifths. We spoke about this last week, the pre-tzaddik. Rav Pinkus brings down the idea of those who believe. Those were the ones who were redeemed. Redemption is, belief in redemption is a prerequisite for redemption. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying here. Hey, B'nai Yisrael lo shamu elai lamin. If B'nai Yisrael aren't believing in me, and they're not believing in the mission, and they don't believe they're going to be redeemed, how's Paro going to believe? This is the key line. What is the argument here? Moshe Rabbeinu says, in order to be able to be redeemed, Klal Yisrael have to believe that they will be redeemed. So if B'nai Yisrael aren't listening to me, and they don't believe they will be redeemed, so too, of course, Paro won't believe that they will be redeemed. Because the only way I can convince Paro and have any effect on Paro is if the people themselves are believers. And this is the argument that Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Hashem and says, how do you expect the people, how do you expect Paro to redeem a people that don't believe in redemption if the belief in redemption is the prerequisite in order to be redeemed? What happened exactly? What was the change that went over the Jewish people that originally they did believe and suddenly they didn't believe? So there are a number of approaches to understand this question. The Mikdash HaLevi offers one, and it's a very fascinating one. He says, you know, when Moshe Rabbeinu originally came, they said, great, wow, you're going to be the Redeemer, we're thrilled. And what happens right afterwards? Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Paro, end of last week's parasha, and Paro, instead of making things easier, that you would see, we're on this, you know, pathway to redemption, you know, things are getting a little bit lighter. No, now you're not giving them straw. Things got even worse. So when things got worse, the Avodah Kasha, the extra heavy labor, they said, forget it, we're not going to believe anymore. Why did Hashem do that? Obviously, we don't know why. But explains to Mikdash HaLevi, there was a reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this. And that is, he says, in order for B'nai Yisrael to be redeemed, and we're dealing with both of Mishibud HaGufani, a physical redemption, Kemo Mishibud HaRuchani, from a spiritual redemption. You have to be able to recognize that the Geula, the redemption, comes from Hashem alone, not through the workings of a human conduit, whether be it Moshe Rabbeinu or be it Paro. You have to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one who can redeem. That's what we say every Pesach, right? Lo Yidei Malach, Lo Yidei Sa, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechvodo Ba'atzmo. This is what we have to, this is the goal, to recognize that the redemption is in only Hashem's hand, and we can't be fooled. And we've spoken about this so, it was almost like a theme every week. We can't be fooled that any other emissary is relying on itself. It's in an absolute form. We have to recognize that redemption comes from Hashem. So when Klal Yisrael immediately believed, Hashem says, hold on a second. Your belief is really not a belief in me. It's a belief in a human emissary that's going to get you out of here. So I'm going to make things worse. And by making things worse, I'm going to have you in a state of complete yeush, a complete despondency, that you're not going to listen. And in that way, you'll realize that the only one who can really save you is a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is the Kal V'chomer 12. If B'nai Yisrael, who by nature want to be redeemed, they have given up all hope, of course Paro, who doesn't want them to be redeemed, is going to make sure not to focus in on redemption at all. And this, I think, is a very important idea for us to understand, is that, you know, sometimes we think there should be a natural progression in things getting better, in whatever area in life, both communally as well as individually. And instead of things getting better, things just seem to be taking a turn for the worse. Stop and reflect. Where are we putting our focus? Are we putting our focus on the doctor, the lawyer, the candlestick maker, whoever that emissary may be? Or do we realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechvodo Ba'atzmo is where it's coming from, and they are just a shaliach, just an emissary? When we realign ourselves to what is the correct truth, then we'll suddenly see that things will change around, because now we have been able to embrace the lesson and the message that we are supposed to through the experience that we're going through. A second approach of why they stop believing is, again, this challenge of the Avodah Kasha. The Chochman Matzpun brings a beautiful idea from the Lev Eliyahu. And he says, Shekobi Atam, source 13, Lifnei Paro Hayarak Acharei Shemina Am Vayktu Vayishtachu. Moshe Rabbeinu needed the people to originally believe to either enter into Paro's palace once. Because Lulei Kein, Eifshar, Kiyei Melech Beloam, right? You have to have the people behind you in order to be successful on your mission. But now what happened? Why originally did they believe and now not? The answer is kotzer ruach, shortness of breath, is like kosher nishima kadam shenishmato ksara. It's like, you know, if you ever walk up on a Shabbos to a high floor in a hotel, right? So by floor 14, for some people it's by floor 3, you get shortness of breath. What is this shortness of breath philosophically about? Klomar she'emuna she'eminu mitchila nitkatsra etzlam. That emuna that they originally felt, I believe, yes, Moshe, we're behind you, suddenly became smaller, diminished. Parchala. And in its place came despondency, a lack of belief. They lost their air. They lost that belief. Why? So says the Medrash, because it was hard for them to separate themselves from Avodah Zarah. A number of interpretations of what this means. But one idea in 14 is, you know, it's one thing to know. And it's one thing to know to know intellectually Hashem exists. But to allow that emunah sikhlit, that intellectual knowledge, to become emunah hushit, to become something that you really feel, that something that you can really hold on to, that is a much harder challenge. And this we know, v'yadata hayom, to know v'hashevosa levavecha, and then to bring it into your heart, that's worlds away. It's one of the greatest distances. We all know. But do we really allow ourselves in the totality of our being to live that knowledge? And this was their problem. Not only their problem, but that's our problem as well. Kishadam magia lamunah hushit, the asterisk in 14, en shum davar yachol lamol kinekdo. When it becomes the totality of your being, then nothing can stand in your way. Vafilu koruchot shabalam lo yazizu min komo. Nothing's going to move you from your place. Aval im hamunah irak sichli, but if it's just intellectual knowledge, then when something chumri, shehu muchash baguf, then tashkocha. If there's something that is physical, that comes in its way, and we'll explain in a moment, then what happens? Suddenly, like, you know, the air is taken out, and your emunah diminishes. And this is what happened with Klal Yisrael. It happened with the Zakenim who originally went with Moshe Rabbeinu to speak to Paro. And as they got closer, their fear grew and grew until they all disappeared. Klal Yisrael are believing, they're doing great. But as soon as you put on more hard work, as soon as you put on, you know, finding the straw and waking up earlier in the morning with the same quota, then all of that emunah disappears. Because what are you feeling instead? You're feeling the cold, brute reality of life. And this is the challenge that Klal Yisrael had at that time. Yes, they believed, but what was lacking, what was missing, was allowing that belief to become part and parcel of self, right? A person believes that Hashem is in control of all their money. But when they have a business deal in front of them, that maybe not so kosher, we cut corners. Why? Because that physical pleasure of money takes a stronger hold on a person than the intellectual knowledge that God is controlling and decides every Rosh Hashanah how much money you're going to make. This is the reality of how we live, that what we can feel becomes much more real to us than what we just experienced intellectually. And this was a challenge that Klal Yisrael had. If Klal Yisrael, as soon as hard work comes on them, and they're essentially believers, they no longer believe, you think Paro, who by essence doesn't believe, is now going to start believing? And we see this every time, you know, he says, yeah, okay, I'll send you out, I believe, and then the Makkah's gone. He doesn't believe. So if Klal Yisrael, who hold, Moshe Rabbeinu realizes it's hard for them to reach a high level of holding on to their belief, you expect Paro to be able to be a maimon for him to believe? And this was the challenge. This was the fear of Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, I can't go to Paro unless Klal Yisrael believe in this mission. You can't expect me to try to convince a case and be an adversary of a case that Klal Yisrael themselves don't believe in. And as we saw, the prerequisite for them to be redeemed is to believe in redemption. So he's basically saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I won't be successful. There's nothing for me to say. I'm limited in what I can say because of the reality in front of me. There's no way you can convince someone if you yourselves aren't convinced. And that, my friends, is one of the major lessons that we do learn from this particular idea. Rav Schlesinger says this very clearly in Eila HaDvarim. He says, "V'nirei mikan yisod gadol b'chinuch." This is an important lesson in education. "Le'olam ein efsharut l'shachanei acherim." You cannot think that you can. You have any ability to influence others. "Be'eze shehu davar." In any area, "ima meshuchna atzmo shlucha v'ena mushchanim ba'atzmam b'tzidkat advarim." If you yourself don't believe in it, there's no way you're going to be able to convince somebody else. And he says, "Am Yisrael will never be able to convince the Umos HaOlam, the nations of the world, in the fact that we are allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael if we ourselves don't believe in our right to live here. If we have any doubt of the veracity of the promise that Hashem gave to us that this is our land and this is where we belong, then how can we possibly think that we can convince the nations of the world of this as well?" And this is the challenge that that Moshe Rabbeinu felt. And the Ordania, Rav Daniel Ochian, takes this one step further. And he says, "Well, you see this in parenting with children, that the only way a parent will be successful in being able to transmit a message, the Av, the Mechanech, the parent, the teacher, is only if they are holding by this as well." So he gives the example, if a father wants his children, his sons, to go to Davin Mincha Ma'ariv and Shul, and he himself doesn't go to Shul, there's no way he can tell his children to go Davin. And he likens this to, like, you know, your house is wired with like a Shidur Chai, a live showing, where everything you do is being watched by your children. So you can talk from here to tomorrow about Stukka, about Chesed, about Emes, about all these wonderful values. But if you're not living these values, then the amount of impact you will have be limited. And he brings at the end of 16 a Gevaldik Saf Sofer, who says on the Pasuk in Shema, "The Limadetem Otam Benechem," and you should teach it to your children, "Ludaber Bam," to speak these words, "B'shivtecha B'veitecha," when you are sitting in your house. So he notes that it begins in the plural, "B'limadetem," and you should teach, and it, the end of the Pasuk is in the singular, "B'shivtecha," not "B'shivtechem," not when you are sitting in your house, but when you, singular, are sitting in your house. And he says that this is the idea. When you, singular, parent, are sitting in your house, and you are doing, and are a live role model, then you'll have the ability of Limad Tamotam B'Venechem, to be able then to teach your children to speak these words. But you have to be living it. It has to be alive and real for you. You know, so many times people want their children to be a certain way, but they say, you know what, I'm limited, I'm too old, I'm too cynical, I'm too this, I'm too that. You know, I can't, you know, act this way. So my friends, it's limited. Chinuch is very much on modeling, on parenting, on patterning. And this perhaps is one of the most beautiful insights of Rav Schwab. Very famous insight of Rav Schwab. It's in Rav Schwab on the Haftorah of Parashat Noso, the story, it's quoted in 18, the story of Manoach, whose wife gets this vision of from an angel. She's alone in the field, and the angel tells her, "You'll have a child, and he will be a Nazir Mibete. He shall be a Nazirite from birth. He should drink wine, etc." And Manoach pleads and says, "Please come again. I want to hear what to do." So the question that the Mefarshim ask is, why does Manoach go to a Gadol or to somebody else? Why does he want the angel to reappear again? Why does he want to hear it from the angel? He doesn't trust his wife. So he says, a novel idea suggested here. Manoach did not request that the angel reappear to clarify the laws of Nazirus. He knew them. Rather, he wished to ask the angels about the matters of chinuch, of educating children. Manoach wanted to understand how he would be able to raise a child with the additional restrictions and holiness of a Nazir if he, the child's father, wouldn't follow these restrictions himself. And indeed, when the angel returned, he said, "You are right, Manoach. The father of a child who will be a Nazir must also conduct himself as a Nazir." And he shows us grammatically how this is indeed perhaps shown in the pasuk. Children learn from their parents do far more from what their parents say. Just as a parent cannot raise a child to be a Nazir, unless he condemns himself as a Nazir, no parent can expect his child to adhere to good behavior that he himself does not embrace. So idea number one that we see on this middle level. First, we saw that you have to believe in Moshe Rabbeinu. If you don't believe in the person you're sending and you don't give him credibility and you don't listen to him, he has no ability to go. Two, you have to believe in the message itself. You have to believe that you're going to be redeemed. If you yourself don't believe you're going to be redeemed, then you're not going to be redeemed. You have to believe in B'schus Amunah Nigala, will say that you have to believe. Ah, why didn't they believe if they originally believed? So they didn't believe in order to make sure that Hashem said to them. Or they didn't believe because they, although they believe, they're a belief that is based on just intellectual ideas, that is not grounded in our emotional reality, it's going to be a limited belief. And that is the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu says, if they're not holding, of course Paro isn't holding either. Like, if they're not going to be who are Maminim, B'nei Maminim, that's the Kal V'chomer. Of course Paro won't believe as well. And the upshot of this, says the Lev Eliyahu, again the Chochman HaMatzpun is quoting in 19, is the following. If they, who are on such a high level, were able so quickly to have their emunah deflated, what are we going to say about our own lives? Do we realize how easy it is for us that we aren't holding by emunah? Pashut, the middle of 19, ki kesharuach mitkater hachomer babim kobo. Anything that happens, any frustration, any challenge, boom, we no longer believe it. And in particular, when we're dealing with taivas, with the desires, it's so easy to see how emuna flies out the window. Because the person loves themselves, and they're focused all day on making themselves happy. And therefore, it makes sense, as Ibn Ezra said, "Im pamlu konecha, once to God, v'rabo l'ur tzoncha, and many times to yourself, ech yitam avonecha, how will sin ever stop?" And this is what we have to remember. To not come to a level of kotzer ruach, to be able, he says, through learning Musar, to strengthen ourselves in emuna. And as we mentioned, you know, we've given this example before. You want to make a fancy recipe, and there's an ingredient there. That's a quasi-hechsher that you hold by, you don't hold by. But you want to impress people. So that feeling of wanting to impress people, or that feeling that this food is really yummy, even though they just now recently changed its texture. So you think, well, beforehand the texture was okay, so it can't be really bad, because like what ingredient would they have added? It's probably, you know, some politics. So what have I done? I've taken my rutzot, my desire to eat this particular food, or to feel good, you know, status among my friends. That's more important than holding my emuna, that if this is a hechsher, this is a kosher qualification that is questionable, for me to step back. And it's true in so many different areas of life. We want to go to a certain place, or eat at a certain simcha, and kashrus is questionable. You know, do we ask, or do we look into it? What's stronger, my desire to eat, my desire to, whatever the desire is, or its own Hashem, or the will of God? And this is the gewaldic pshat, I think it's mamish, brilliant, of the Divrei Yisrael, it's not pshat, actually the gewaldic drash, of the Divrei Yisrael, of the Majitzer Rebbe. And he says in 20, Rabbosai, listen, open up our hearts to listen to this. It's mamish, unbelievable. Upei Rush Rashi, ze'echad mikal v'chomer sheva Torah. That's pshat in what it means when Rashi says that this is a kal v'chomer in the Torah. So normally we understand a kal v'chomer means if B'nai Yisrael won't listen to me and their maminim, B'nai maminim, of course, Paro's not a maimin. Of course he won't believe. No. Peirush emuna hi kal v'chomer. What Rashi's really saying, again, derech drush, not derech pshat, is that emuna is something that's a kal v'chomer. Shenire kadavar kal, We think it's something easy. She means she medabrim shagur b'fiv emuna. Ein lecha adam shemalam shemar lo shem lo munachas v'shalom. We think emuna is something easy. People will say baruch Hashem and yirtzah Hashem, bezrat Hashem. You know, we're shem shemayim shagur b'fiv. Everything's what Hashem wants, and I call to avi rachman lo tavav, and everything Hashem does is for the good. Emuna is something we look at as kal, as easy, as simple. But really, it is one of the most difficult of all difficult things. Because if you really believe, why are you worried? Why do you look around thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, I have this, oh you know, and this stress and that stress. You should believe that everything God does is for the good. Obviously, if you're established, but like, what is your worrying headaches going to accomplish? So here's pshat. When Rashi says this is one of the kal vachomers in the Torah, it means that this is one of the kal vachomers that the Torah is founded on, and that is emuna. Seems to be kal. Seems to be easy. But it's one of the most difficult things to really make part and parcel of our lives. Rav Gamliel Rabinowitz, in the essence of Emunah, the first principle to work on for someone who wants to strengthen himself and enter into the gateways of Avodas Hashem 21 is the fundamental point upon which his entire spiritual edifice of Torah and mitzvah stands. And that's Emunah. It is both the starting point of everything, as well as the objective of everything, as Chazal have taught us. Bach HaVakuk V'midan Malachat Tzadik V'Emunato Yechiyah. The righteous person will live through his Emunah. That's the entire Chumash, entire Torah. David HaMelech also proclaimed, all your mitzvahs are emunah, meaning all the mitzvahs of Torah have been given for one person, emunah. A person must always review and repeat to himself thoughts of emunah and bitachon. And the name of Hashem should constantly be in his heart and on his lips. Without it, there's no way for a person to ascend even a little bit the ladder of Avodas Hashem. 22, the reason is that without emunah and bitachon, one will never be able to strengthen oneself to overcome any trials or tribulations. There isn't a second that if a person is not faced with some type of test, be it large or small, in this world. Life is full of traps, snares, stumbling blocks, which the Yetzer Hara places before a person all the time. He also tries to awaken in people's minds feeling of sadness and confusing thoughts. Without a fountain of emunah flowing from a person's heart, he will have nothing with which to quench his thirst. If so, how will he have the ability to successfully cross the desert? However, with emunah, even if he is faced with difficult situations, he'll be able to persevere. For though the righteous one may fall 7 times, he will get up and stand strong, holding on to a staff, the staff of Emunah and Bitachon. Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz, in the Sefer Constant Mitzvos, Mitzvah number 1, the Emunah, he speaks about the Megillah, rather quoted to Purim. It's not about history, it's about destiny. And it's part of the Tanakh because we have to be able to see how things fall into a greater picture. Think about the grand events in your own life. The person you married and the person you didn't marry. The job you accepted, the one you really wanted but did not get. The teachers who influenced you. You may start to notice a pattern. Sometimes the grand events are not enough. You will have to focus on the minute details of life. People you met seemingly by chance who affected you in some way. A train you missed that caused you to see an advertisement on the next train that helped you to grow. A ride you took with a friend during which you overheard a conversation that contained an important message for your life. Such introspection can boost your emunah as you begin to make sense of your life and the path that has been paved for you. It might be painful sometimes. There might be questions. There may be events that you simply cannot understand. Don't forget, you are in the middle of the story. If we were to stop reading the Megillah somehow in the middle, we wouldn't be able to make sense of it. We should internalize the message of the Megillah, use it as a guide for our lives. Emunah cannot be just intellectual. It has to be emotional. Idea number 1. Why didn't the people believe? They didn't believe in Moshe Rabbeinu as the messenger. I am in Aral Satayim. I can't open my mouth. Who am I to talk? Level number 2, they didn't believe in the message itself. Originally, they did believe. But belief that is just founded intellectually, when something like hard work comes in your way and things that are diversions of different natures come in your way, there goes the idea of believing. And if you're not going to believe in the message itself, you're not going to be successful in being able to give it over. And this is our challenge. It is our daily, not daily, moment by moment, not even hourly, challenge when we're tested at all times. I want to speak to the Lashon Hara. I want to get angry at this person. And all of our midos. It's all about emunah. If I saw that everything was coming from the Ribono Shel Olam, if I saw that there's a larger picture, there's a larger plan, if I live the Megillah mindset, then I would be able to make emunah part and parcel of my life, strengthen that ability of emunah, so that even when difficult things do come, I'm able to hold strong and be able to persevere even in these difficult situations. The final idea on level number one, really, is not only that they had to believe in Moshe Rabbeinu, not only did they have to believe in the message, but probably the most important thing is they have to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the ultimate one who's giving this message. So now we come to the insight of Rabbi Miller in Shabbat Shirim. Moreover, as Rabbi Israel Ezekiel Landau points out, the motive given for Israel recalcitrance is self-puzzling. A nation that finds itself plunged into suffering and slavery is usually too willing to listen to the hopes of salvation. Why then should the fact of the bitter suffering have prevented the Israelites from listening to the glad tidings of redemption? So we saw the Medrash the Alkut says they were unwilling to wrench themselves away from idolatry. What exactly does this mean? So he says, let's take a look at another story in our parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen come before Paro, and they do the Mofet, the wondrous sign of Aaron throws down his staff, it turns into a snake. The Chartumim, the magicians, do the same, but then Aaron's staff swallows their staffs. Rav Simcha Zissel points out that although in effect Paro's magicians also exceeded the same feat as Aaron, the assertion of the latter's superiority is quite clear and definite. Aaron's staff swallowed those of the magicians, not while they were in their transformed state as serpents. I can understand how serpents eat up other serpents, as glorious that may be, but when they had all reverted to their normal state. In this way, all suspicion of sorcery and magic on Aaron's part was banished. Only the hand of God could have worked this miracle. Yet in spite of all this, Paro and his court drew no conclusions from these miracles. And, Vayechazak lev Paro v'lo shama lehem, he doesn't listen. Such incredible recalcitrance is explained by Rav Dessler as being nourished from the very roots of Avodah Zarah. Rabosai, listen closely. This is a deeper pshat, and they couldn't get away from Avodah Zarah idolatry, and that's why they didn't listen. You know what idolatry is about? By this he means the unwillingness, Rav Dessler, in human nature to pursue a matter to its logical conclusion. It is that approach to a problem that will only probe to a certain depth. The search for truth has not the passion and urgency that will drive it to the utmost point of discovery. Perhaps the truth is sometimes unpalatable. Perhaps man prefers often to stop at a convenient rest half, a halfway mark on the map, refuse to look further. In this lies the cause of all the idolatries and false beliefs of mankind. At some stage in the search for truth, men were contented to pitch their tents to stifle their sense of wonder, of curiosity, their sheer need to come to the source and cause of existence. The ultimate questions are not raised. Even logic is not pushed to its own conclusion. Everywhere it is human desire that dictates the conclusions of logic. What does Avodah Zarah mean? Avodah Zarah means it's convenient for me. It makes sense to me. Ah, if I would follow it to its logical conclusion, well, who made, I would then have to be forced, like Avraham Avinu, to say there must be Ribono Shel Olam. So I don't go that far. I stop midway, and I just, turn off. And if I turn off, so I'm satisfied where I'm at, without having to think even further. On the other hand, the arrow in 26, the need to reach the rock bottom of truth, the desire to know the very source and origin of life, this is a religious urge that impels man beyond the physical, the material, and his longing for a transcendental truth. This is the inquiry that would encompass the whole of life down to its root, the temperament that is content to consider only a part of experience, to accept that section of it that can comfortably fit into its own requirement. This is a temperament that is satisfied with materialistic accounts of the universe, and this is what the arbitrary nature of idolatry is in its own right. This is a state of a willful bafflement, mystification, when the chain of causation is broken off abruptly. It's the pursuit of truth to its ultimate source that brings light clarity and understanding of life in its entirety. Now, my friends, I can be able to pull this together. The sforno on the words they could not settle their minds to contemplate is what it means, ma'avodah kasha. Says the sforno, what is hard work about? It means that they were so constantly busy that who had the time to really think? In order to know truth, man must contemplate, must allow himself time and equanimity in which to ponder and absorb his experience. For this deeper introspection, Paro did not give the Israelites time. This was the pressure that he laid on him. This is what the Rebbe Chaim speaks about. Paro's order that even heavy work should be laid on them was in order to stop them from thinking. This is the design, it is compared to the craft of the evil one within us, who would, if he could, prevent us from thought, from taking to heart the moral lessons we receive each day in the sheer flutter and chaos of routine living. My friends, now I understand. At first they believed. And then, when they're faced with this question of belief again, what they needed to do was to think. They needed to ponder. They needed to work it through to its ultimate conclusion. Well, how come it is going more difficult? Back to the Mikdash HaLevi we began with. What do you think Hashem has in mind here? But you can only go back to that source when you have the space, the time, and the quiet to be able to do that. If you're constantly pressured and constantly working, as the Sforno says, that's the Avodah Kasha. They didn't have time to think through. So when they don't have time to think through, they said, I can't listen to you, Moshe. Why, Avodah Kasha, Kotzaruach, shortness of breath. I can't even talk to you. I don't have time to breathe. Right? When a person doesn't have time to breathe, they're very flustered and they're very overwhelmed. Maybe one or two of you have ever experienced that experience in your life. You know exactly what I'm talking about. This is the greatest challenge that we have. And the Oryahel, the Yaakov Lekartov quotes the Oryahel in 30, the Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chasman, who Mamish calls this a disease. He says this is a disease called Kotzer Ruach. And take a look at the Aaron 31. Shekol Adam, every person, Af HaGadol Biyoter, Hayod V'Adamu U'Medameh, every person has in them this ability to catch this disease. It's a very catchy disease, my friends. Who alu lachalop machalma hamameret shall kotzer ruach. You know what this catchy disease is called? It's called shortness of breath. You know what this is about? Says Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chasman, it's about hitbonenut. It's about not thinking. It's about not focusing. And when you live your life where you're just going, and you're not thinking, and you're not focusing, so then, yeah, I have a question about this, and this doesn't make sense, so let me just drop everything, and this doesn't fit in, so let me just drop that. We don't think. We don't give ourselves the time and the space to really be able to ponder. This was a challenge that Klal Yisrael had in the desert, in Mitzrayim. Rabbi Tamar Schwartz, in Getting to Know Yourself, says this, it's essential in order to find the self to have an hour of quiet in the day, to base your life on a foundation of inner quiet. The tumultuous life, which we're all too familiar, might bring about a lot of giving, but it cannot foster the exposure of the eye inside a person. When we speak of exposing the eye, we mean more than a short-lived experience. It's a perspective built upon inner quiet. And elsewhere, the Sefer in 33, he says, inner quiet is a great treasure that exists inside each person. Yet there's a deeper treasure, the revelation of the presence of the Creator within. And this can only occur if we can already experience inner quiet. Hashem, at Pasuk Malachim, does not come with a commotion or the strong wind, but with a cold, dvama, daka, subtle, quiet voice. For us to find that cold of Amad Daka, we have to be in the state of alone, quiet, and focused. You know, my friends, it's almost comical. You read a piece like this, you see that our Emunah is really predicated on having time to think, to be able to connect, to be able to hear that quiet, still voice within us. And then you look at the pressures and realities of our lives, particularly in now, year, in the Goyish day, 2016, Tashin Ayin Vav. We really feel it. You know, phones going off all the time, right? Every time you get a message, you get a beep. And you know, you have everything in your house is electronic. And, you know, a beeper for this and a beeper for that. And your car beeps. And, you know, everything talks to you. Like, we are surrounded by sound. Have you ever noticed, like, we don't have quiet? Like, it's scary. And it's scary because if we live in this world of constant commotion, where everything is out there and everything's public, and you know, people have Facebook and you know, they sit down to have coffee with their friend, it's posted all over the place. Where's the privacy? Where's the sense of self? Where's the sense of I? Where's the sense of the godliness within me? And this is what the Chumash is teaching us in this Kal Vachomer. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, if Klal Yisrael don't have that time to really connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu, if Klal Yisrael don't have this ability to really investigate, then how can Paro himself be able to believe in a God? Why? Because Paro himself has so convinced himself that he is God, that he too has not gone beyond the contemplation state as well. So if B'nai Yisrael aren't able to go through this contemplation state because of their kotzaruah, because they don't have time to contemplate, because they're so busy and pressured with their lot in life of having to work hard and they don't have a moment to breathe. I have a little secret to tell you, say the Sfarim. Paro also is overwhelmed. He also has a major focus in his life, and he also doesn't have time to breathe. And because of that, he also can't contemplate God. What is the overwhelming pressure that Paro has that he can't go from state to state to be able to realize that there's a God in this world? So says the Birkas Mordechai, well, as Rabbi Miller, 35, 36, I'll tell you what Paro's major preoccupation was. He had to show everybody that he was a god. He went to the bathroom in the wee hours of the morning. Yotzei Amayim, Rashi said, so that people should know that he had physical needs, because after all, he was a god. Do you know what it's like to have the inability to go, you'll excuse this, to go relieve yourself the entire day because you have to pretend that you are a god? Do you know what pressure that puts you under, that you constantly have to make sure every word that you say and everything you do is reflection of a god? Says the Birkas Mordechai, you think the Jewish people had an avodah kasha, right? Then Israel can't listen because they have hard work. Kavachomer Paro can't listen. He also has hard work. Yeah, he has hard work. You bet. His work is even harder than B'nai Yisrael. His work is psychological. He has to make sure that he lives this imagery of being a god. But both of them, at their root, it's a avodah zarah. And that is the inability to contemplate and realize that Hashem is running the show. And for Paro, this inability to realize how limited he is. And he's only human. Li yori bani yasitini. I'm the Nile and I made it. What foolishness to be able to step back and able to see that Hashem really runs the world. So my friends, we finished level number one. Let's just step back, see what we've seen, and move to level number two. Moshe Rabbeinu here is presenting a very solid case to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They don't believe in me, they don't believe in the mission, and they don't believe in you. Or they're not able to contemplate real belief in you. If we're in a state of being where these factors are not in place, there is no way that A, I will be able to be the emissary to convince Paro. There is no way that Paro himself will be convinced if the people aren't convinced. And there's no way that Paro is going to believe in you, Hashem, if the people themselves aren't holding a belief in you, because no one is standing around a little long enough time to really think about what's going on. So if this is the reality, what do you expect from the Jews, and what do you expect from Paro? And no one's listening, so therefore my whole mission is really wasted, and why should I go to Paro? My friends, on this level, we've learned a tremendous amount of messages for our lives. Just to highlight some, one, you have to realize that if you want to get a message across, you have to believe in the message. Just to pay lip service to a message is very limited. And two, we also realize that emunah is something that has to be constantly worked on, but worked on not just intellectually, worked on emotionally. Worked on that when I want to say something about a person who's hurt me, I step back and say, you know what, yes, I want to say that, and yes, I have a personal need, but Hashem's will is greater. I want to cheat on something that no one will know about and make a couple of extra bucks. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching, he's in charge. To be able to live the emunah, and to be able to really feel it, to the point of I'm not worried, because I know Kodesh Baruch Hu is taking over my life and watching over me. And that's an avoda. It's a lifetime progress process. And three, to be able to spend time in our day of absolute quiet. Even if it's just 5 minutes. 5 minutes is a long time, my friends. Try making something in the microwave for 5 minutes. It's like, particularly for a kid, it's like, oh my gosh, when is it ever going to be ready? To be able to say, you know, it could be in the car. No music, no shir, nothing. Just alone with yourself. To be able to hear yourself. Turn that cell phone off. Turn all the beepings off. Just to be able to have the space. And allowing ourselves that space of quiet allows ourselves to hear that kol dvama daka, that silent still voice, to be able to hear the godliness in this world, to be able to see the godliness in this world, and not to be obscured and diverted from all those things that take us away from what our focus is really about. But then, my friends, we come to the second level, which is a whole different understanding of what this Kal Vachomer is about. This, well, if Paro is, if Bnei Yisrael are going to listen, they don't believe in me, and they don't believe in the mission, they don't believe in God, how do you expect Paro to, where, if, you know, he, etc., etc. No. But Pinchas Friedman, in the Shilei Pinchas, in 37, he says the following. He quotes a very interesting chiddush of the Chasam Sofer. Hey Bnei Yisrael lo shamu elai, nitkaven bekach, Moshe Rabbeinu is establishing the idea of a Kal Vachomer, and he wants it to be part of the 13 principles of faith wherein the Torah is expounded through this. He wanted this to be stated up in heaven. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who established this. Right? And that explains Vayedaber Moshe lifnei Hashem, in front of Hashem. In front of Hashem, that he wanted this established, he wanted this to be said even before this, you know, Mamet Har Sinai. And again, the Shilei Pinchas deals with this at length, and I'm just highlighting here. He said, this explains the very famous question, where the Gemara says, 38, three things Moshe Rabbeinu did mida'ato from his own mind, and Hashem agreed with it. One of them was he added an extra day in receiving the Torah. One is he separated from his wife, and that was two. And three, he broke the luchos. The Gemara learns that separating from his wife and breaking the luchos were a Kal Vachomer. So, for example, if Klal Yisrael had to separate from their wives when they were to receive the Torah, so I, who speak to Hashem at all times, should separate from my wife. So Tosfos asks, that's a Kal Vachomer. Why does the Gemara say he did it midaato, from his mind? So the answer is very simple, according to Chacham Sofer. The whole idea of Kal Vachomer comes from Midato, comes from his mind. This is something that Moshe Rabbeinu enacted, instituted in the idea of learning Torah. What does this mean? What is it significant? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu bringing a Kal Vachomer here? What was he trying to aim at? So let's step back a moment. Last page 39. Mikdash Halevi. You know, you take a look at Moshe Rabbeinu's life. There's like a theme. You know, if anyone wants to live a life that's true to themselves, they should have a theme song in their life. Like one or two ideas. That's the thread that runs through their life. And whatever they do, you can say, ah, they have this mida, they have this quality. Then you know the person is holding on a level of shlemus, of wholeness, that you're really living. You know, they say this in Pirkei Avos, when it says, hu haya omer, he would say, it means that's all he said. He only said one thing. No. This is what he lived. This is what he said. This was his entire being. You know, that's how it explains. You know, Shmuel Katan said, bin pol oivecha al tismach. It's a pasuk. He didn't say it. When your enemy falls, don't rejoice. But no, Shmuel Katan would always say that. And that's why he was able to make the bracha of a malshini. Hu haya omer. We need to have a hu haya omer. We need to live what we believe in. So what was Moshe Rabbeinu's mantra in life? What was his... We spoke about this a bit last week, and that was sensitivity to the people, right? Mecheni namet sifrecha, erase me from your book. What mattered to Moshe Rabbeinu the most was standing up for the people. You know where you see this, my friends? It's a gevaldik vort. When Moshe Rabbeinu was at the end of his life, when he was faced with this challenge of getting water for the people, so Hashem said, speak to the rock. What does Moshe Rabbeinu write? If the rock, who's inanimate, listens, how much worse will Bnei Yisrael listen? What does Moshe Rabbeinu do? He hits the rock. Why? because wanting to protect the honor of the Jews. It looks terrible. A rock listens and Jews don't listen. If you hit the rock, yeah, they'll listen. You hit the Jews, they'll listen too. He did it in order to protect the people, even at his own expense. But if I'm going to go speak to the rock, you know what a busha? You know what embarrassment that would be to the people? Gefout. And this we find by Yonah Hanavi, right? Yonah didn't want the Nineveh to do tshuva. Nineveh's going to do tshuva. You know what that's going to look like in Klal Yisrael? I gefout. Lachain 40. Kasher ra'ah Moshe, when Moshe Rabbeinu saw that Bnei Yisrael lo shamu elav. When Moshe Rabbeinu saw that Bnei Yisrael were listening to him, Nafal alav pachad gadol, he was very afraid. Shema kasher yelech al paro, maybe, who knows, maybe Paro will listen. Va'az oy lo sabusha, va'oy lo sachlima, can you imagine the embarrassment? Kis aria kitra gal Yisrael, this will be such an accusatory force against Klal Yisrael. Shemo shemo b'kol shemosha, they didn't listen. And that's Pshara. Hey, B'nai Yisrael, lo shamu elai. I know, B'nai Yisrael, I'm not listening to me. Hinei came. Ki came. If therefore, ech ye, yeah, what will be in Yishmaini Paro? What will be if Paro will listen to me? Then, V'ani Arel Svatayim. Then I won't be able to open my mouth. I won't have a pitchon peh. I won't know what to say. Paro's going to listen. B'nai Yisrael aren't going to listen. Oh my, I'm stuck. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, 41, Nitchakei Moshe L'chadesh Nifzei HaKadosh Baruch Hu et HaDrash Shel Kal V'Chomer. And he goes at length how the Torah is the foundation of the world and how the Torah creates realities in the world. We're skipping all of those in-between stages. And he says, look, it will be an embarrassment if Bnei Yisrael don't listen to me. So I need this Kal V'Chomer to be in place. If the Yisrael aren't going to listen to me, for sure, Paro can't listen to me. That is something, Zechemi, this is one of the Asara Kavachomers in the Torah, means that this is a Kavachomer Moshe Rabbeinu is instituting here. It's as if he's pleading on behalf of Klal Yisrael and saying to them, and this is the second part of the title, defensiveness, I need Paro not to listen. Not that, and what will be, of course, Paro won't listen. No, I need this to be the reality. I know that Bnei Yisrael aren't listening. That I know. Hey, Bnei Yisrael, lo shamu elai. So therefore, Hashem, I need you to make sure that Paro won't listen as well. And if you look at the psukim, you will see that this is mamish pshat. After they go through the genealogy, it repeats this Kal V'Chomer as Moshe Rabbeinu's statement. And Hashem responds, I'm sending you on this mission, and I am going to harden Paro's heart. What is the hardening of Paro's heart? It's the answer to Moshe's prayer. Moshe's prayer was, you have to make sure that Paro doesn't listen. Hashem says, don't worry. I'll harden his heart. He won't listen, and therefore there's no kitruv. There's no accusatory force on Klal Yisrael. And he says here, this is what the Kal V'Chomer did. The Kal V'Chomer yishtaneh ha-tevel shel Paro. It creates a change in Paro that he's now not going to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu come what may. And there's no kitrug on Klal Yisrael. You say, well, hold on a second. This isn't fair. Got to give the guy free choice. So he says clearly, if Hashem knew that he was going to do tshuva, you know, real tshuva, not from coercion of external forces, of course Hashem would have accepted it. But Hashem knew that this was not the case in Paro's life, and therefore he understood that hardening his heart was part and parcel of the nature of who Paro is. But you know what, my friends, we learned from this, and this is our final lesson for today, and a very important one. Moshe Rabbeinu, throughout his life, is standing up for the honor of the Jew, of standing up for the honor of his people, for the honor of the people that he is involved with. He's ready to strike a rock and not to speak to a rock. He turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he says, you know, I'm not here to talk about whether Bnei Yisrael are right or wrong and not believe it. This is the reality. They're holding in a place of kotzer ruach, of avodat kashah, a shortness of breath. I can't do anything about it. But I'll tell you what I can do. I can make sure that they're not shown up. I can make sure that they don't look bad for being in this state. That I can at least save their honor. So therefore, this is one of the ten Kal V'Chomers in the Torah. What the Shin Pinchas is saying is that Moshe Rabbeinu is establishing establishing the concept of Kal Vachomer in order to protect the honor of the Jews here, that Paro should listen. And really what he's asking for in this Kal Vachomer, it's not a statement, it's a request. And this is how you understand the pasuk. Behold, the children of Israel, now listen to me. So how will Paro listen to me isn't a question, it's a statement. So ve'ech yishmeini Paro, how will it look if Paro listens to me? Therefore, you can't allow him to listen to me, because then I'm of sealed lips. I have no pistol pack. I can't say anything to protect the Jews. My friends, this is a midah, a quality that we all need to have in our leadership positions, in our family positions. It's ability to believe in the people that we are representing. Till now, we've been focusing in on the leader having to have the backing of the people. But it also works that the leader has to believe in the people as well. It works both ways, and we come full circle. Where will you really have the people backing the leader? When the leader backs the people. When the leader is going to be one who's ready to sacrifice self and stand up with fortitude and with strength and to try to defend the people that you are with. It doesn't mean that, you know, what they did was right and good, but at least try to be, you know, mainly yosher, try to see the good and what they've done. And this perhaps, well, this will end, is the Vort by Rav Wilson, that's not on our sheets, where he says, when Hosea was told, Hachlifeinu ma'acheret, you know, I want to switch the people, B'nei Israel chatu, B'nei Israel of sin, and Hosea's response was, Hachlifeinu ma'acheret, okay, switch them for another nation. And we read this, we say, oh my gosh, can you imagine a Navi not defending the people? Says Rav Wilson, not at all. He was as if saying to Hashem, go try to find another nation. Go see. Hachlifeinu ma'acheret. Yes, they sinned. But you think you can find another nation that's as good as Klal Yisrael? Go see if you can find them. This is the hallmark of the Nevi'im throughout all time. This has to be the hallmark of us. It is so easy to criticize this group of Jews and that group of Jews, and how could they have done that, and how could they have done this? There's enough criticism going on in life. What we need to do is to see the Ayin Tova. We need to see the goodness. We need to see the positivity. And in the schus, in the merit of being able to stand and defend, and be able to see what was driving them, and to try to find as much as we can a way to see the goodness, and to down to Lekaschu, to find the merit of goodness in what people are doing, particularly what groups of people are doing, is the key to be able to bring down that Shefa Bracha, where Hashem says, you're right, let's focus on the goodness, let's see the merit, and in that way bring a tremendous amount of Shefa Bracha, a tremendous amount of goodness into our world.